see the light. Just stand up for your right. Yeah.
Get up, stand up.
Yeah, yeah.
Stand up for your right.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed.
You are listening to KPOO, San Francisco, 89.5, and you reach Reality Sandwich, a palatable taste of the truth, Healthful Living's radio show on the mind, body, and the planet. And you have just been listening to Martin Matthews, a certified medical hypnotherapist, sharing a little bit of the Declaration of Independence with us. I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant. And every week we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on the mind, body, and our planet. And today we are going to be talking about the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, our rights, our freedoms, and what the Founding Fathers intended. And we have a wonderful guest with us today whose name is Mark Lyon, and we will talk about him more in a moment.
And how incredible that we should be speaking of this subject today, Julie. Over the past few weeks on Reality Sandwich, we have been speaking about paradigm shifts, major changes in our individual and collective thinking that are underway on the planet right now. We've been speaking in the last few weeks about global energy and politics and some things that are really shifting in our world around us. And today we're going to be speaking as best we can, getting back to really understanding some of the core premises of our nation that we live in here, and this notion of freedom. Where do our rights come from? What do we mean by freedom?
So let's see if we can get Mark on the phone. Mark is what he would call himself, just another guy who happens to like reading the founding documents, and he is from Source, Southern Oregon Resource Center, where they do asset protection. Mark, are you with us?
I am with you guys. How are you doing today?
We're great. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you on.
Great to be here.
So you want to share a little bit about what you do and who you are?
Well, certainly. Again, as you just said, we're called the Source. It stands for Southern Oregon Resource Center Educational Services. And what I'd like to do is just read the first part of our mission statement, which says, to re-inhabit the American Republic with sovereign citizens who understand the spiritual and legal framework set out in the founding documents of the United States of America.
Mm.
And, of course, again, like you said earlier, we're about asset protection and creating testamentary tools so you can pass your wealth on to future generations without will, without probate, because if you don't own it, then obviously it's not something the government can get involved in.
Mm.
So we set up entities that you put your stuff into, so instead of you passing on and it has to go through this government rigmarole, it's now already in entities and your heirs take over the entity.
Mm-hmm. So just, Mark, it's a, for some reason the connection's a little bit spotty. So if you can speak up, if you can speak up as we go on, that would be, that'd be wonderful. So we are thrilled to have you here today because we've heard you talk on this topic before, and we think you do a very succinct job of enlightening us on areas that we might not be aware of. I know myself, I have... It's amazing the fact that what you learn just by really reading it and talking to people about some of these founding documents and the intention of our founding fathers. So, and today we were going to talk about the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution kind of from a broad perspective, and then talk a little bit about the a democracy versus republic, and then the 18 jobs that we gave Congress under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution.
Sounds good. If we have time, we'll move on to the Bill of Rights.
All right. Very good.
Excellent. I think it's tremendously imperative that we, you know, help folks kind of recapture this. I mean, we're living in a time now where we are all familiar with this notion of, you know, we're losing our rights. People say, oh, we're giving up some of our civil rights here and we're giving up there for this or that. And but do people really understand, you know, what are these rights? So where do they come from? And where did it all start? And what were the founding notions of these colonists originally who decided to set up this free nation? And with so much encumbrances today upon our rights, let's look at this from a framework of, you know, why is it so important for us to understand these core notions again?
Fantastic, Martin. Please understand, what we think is going on today is nothing more than citizen narcolepsy. We believe that we the people have fallen asleep. It is now estimated that less than 3% of us have ever read the Constitution and Declaration.
So, Mark, I'm losing you a little bit. Sorry about that.
It's okay. Is that better?
Much better.
Okay. It is estimated that less than 3% of us have read the Declaration and Constitution these days. This is the kind of thing that was taught back in the 1700s and 1800s to all the people by their parents every day. These are where your rights come from. This is what you have to do to protect them as we move forward in time.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, as generations go by, what is going on is what we call patient gradualism, where, I don't know what you want to call them, the global elite or the wealthy of the world are basically imposing their will upon us, and we're basically becoming subject citizens, and basically what government's saying is, we give you your rights, we will control them, whereas that opening, by the way, I love that opening about we hold these truths, and we understand that our rights do not come from government. Our rights come from the Creator. And I'd like to start out by analyzing those two sentences.
Sounds good.
Okay, here we go. So again, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain, and you said unalienable, some people say unalienable, but it's very important to know the first letter is a U. It's not inalienable, it's unalienable, and we'll describe what both of those mean. Rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, that statement right there, again, all men are created equal. Does that mean we're all the same shape, size, and looks? Of course not. What that means is, in the eyes of the law, we are all equal. So the law should treat us exactly the same. What do those words mean? Unalienable, unalienable. Unalienable means it cannot be taxed or turned into a privilege. Unalienable means these rights are yours and cannot be taken away by any legal process. And by the way, these just simply come out of Black's Law Dictionary, all these terms. So what I suggest to people is get a law dictionary, get a copy of the Declaration of the Constitution, and read through it. And when you come to a term you don't understand, please understand the founders were mostly lawyers. And they used legal terms to describe certain events and activities inside the Constitution.
Hmm.
And by the way, please notice that the letter R in the word rights is capitalized. That means they're divine rights. Just like we capitalize the letter C for Creator in the middle of the sentence, or G for God, because the letter R is capitalized, it means these are divine rights. They came with your body. Nobody could take it away. Nobody could turn it into a privilege or tax you on those rights.
Hmm.
That among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What does that mean? Life, according, again, this is right out of Jefferson's memoirs. Life, everything you need to do to stay alive. Shelter, food, earning a living, those are all things that have to do with life. Liberty. By the way, liberty comes from the word libre, like balance of the scales. We all know the sign libre. What that means is you are free to do whatever you want as long as you're in balance and harmony with the rest of the population and nature in general. In other words, freedom is unrestricted activity. We don't have that. My rights end where yours begin. So if you even feel threatened, if I raise my arm and you feel threatened, I am now infringing upon your rights. It's not just physical contact. It's not just me stealing your property. It's when you feel threatened by me that my rights have ended and yours have begun.
Hmm.
Pursuit of happiness. Well, you know, for some people that's going down to the local tavern and tipping a few at night. For others, it's spiritual enlightenment. And by the way, that's what Jefferson had in mind. The pursuit of happiness is spiritual enlightenment. But of course, for each of us, that's a totally individual choice. Nobody can decide that but you.
Mm-hmm.
And the next line, to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Now that we know where our rights come from, they come from the Creator. What is government's job? to secure these rights. That's their only job. We consent to securing our rights, and that's all they're supposed to be doing. Now, let's talk about what is the difference between the Declaration and the Constitution. The Declaration is about you and me. It describes what we are and what we think of ourselves and why we're doing, why the founders did what they did 230 years ago in creating this new nation. And I'm not going to read the whole Declaration, of course, but that's what it is. It's about us. The Constitution, on the other hand, is a job description and limitation. And I'm actually going to read, when we go over those 18 jobs, the last job is to tell government, if it's not in this document, you can't do it. So, again, job limitation and description of what they can and cannot do. And, of course, every government worker, we should all know, takes an oath of office to obey the Constitution. As a result, when they go outside that job description, we know that they're disobeying their oath, and that's nothing less than treason. Where are we, folks? Why aren't we awake on this? You mentioned the difference between a democracy and a republic. By the way, I still have a $1,000 reward for anybody that can find the word democracy in the Constitution or Declaration. It's not there. However, Article 4, Section 4, clearly states that the United States government will guarantee to every union a republican form of government. And by the way, for those of you following the Citizens' Rule Book, let's see, it's on page 46. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government. Well, again, we've been told over and over again, we live in a democracy. Well, the democracy started basically in the early 1900s, and it was really sealed in the 1930s. Those of you that remember going to high school and studying FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and the New Deal, it can start suddenly clicking in your head what was going on back then. The depression was occurring, and I'm not going to get into the details, but we do have sufficient evidence to prove that it was actually artificially created. And then all of a sudden, government was saying, hey, you guys want some free benefits? Sign up for these programs. Give up your God-given rights and exchange them for benefits and privilege. So now government suddenly has the right to regulate us from birth to grave and beyond. So what is the difference between a republic and a democracy? Well, let's start with the democracy because we're all familiar with that. In a democracy, we know that today the federal government is in charge. Then right behind them is the state government. Then comes the county, then the city or local government, and then finally you and your family, and as we know, they keep telling us, no creator allowed, no God allowed, and they call that separation of church and state. And I think we can all agree that that's what's going on. It's a top-down system. Fed's in charge, we're at the bottom, no God allowed.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, that's the exact opposite of what the founders had in mind 230 years ago when they started this whole thing. And by the way, that whole idea of separation of church and state came out of a letter Thomas Jefferson wrote to John Adams back right around when the War of 1812 was started, and they picked up on that, and suddenly the Supreme Court's using it, and it's written that, you know, we can't bring God into anything we do. Where, of course, we know the founders had the exact opposite mind, that if we, the people, believed in a creator, believed in a God, that we would be much less, have much less tendencies to hurt each other or to hurt each other's property. Because, again, for those of you that are believers, understand that it's part of that doctrine, you can't hurt others on this planet. Mm-hmm. So in taking that whole idea of believing in a creator and taking that into the form of government, we can now control ourselves and self-govern. And that's where the word sovereign comes in. Sovereign just simply means supreme self-rule. And I think that most of us, I would say 99.999% of us, are capable of self-government. Sounds like I've got some theories as to why crime is so high, and I believe indirectly government causes it through regulation and control that most people can't earn an honest living and out of desperation do turn to crime. I mean, you can see it, like, for example, in the drug laws. Gangs don't sell computers. There's no money in it. They sell drugs because that's where the money is.
Right.
How are you doing?
Right. Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Now everybody's waiting patiently to hear, how does that differ from a republic?
fantastic. Again, if I seem to be rambling on or saying something and you want to ask a question, feel free to interrupt me at any time. So now we have the Republic. As we know, under the rules, or as what the Declaration said, that the Creator is in charge. So now put the Creator on top, if you're taking notes. Underneath the Creator, we the people come. So the individual and the family comes right under the Creator. Underneath that, the government you come in most contact with should be the government that has the most power. And under the rules of the Republic, that's your local city or township government. Then comes your county government, your state government, and your federal government. So again, if you compare that to democracy, you can see they have simply flipped over the entire chart. The federal government, we the people, in that contract I was telling you about, known as the Constitution, gave them 18 specific jobs, and that's all they're supposed to do. Congress has been given only 18 jobs, and for those of you that want to follow along, on page 37 of the Citizens Rulebook, I noticed you had the link on there.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I do want to encourage people to get hard copies of the Citizens Rulebook by going to Witten Printers, and you can look that up on the Internet, and buy them. I believe if you buy them in packs of 100, they're 60 cents a piece. We can support Witten Printers and carry a couple of them with you at all times. Give them away to the gas station attendants. Give them away to people that you meet on the side of the road. Because the only way we're going to regain this country is by not only educating ourselves first, but of course talking to at least 10 people a day and spreading the word as to what this country is truly about.
Mm-hmm.
And if you follow what's going on in the news, you know that in the end, government is causing all these problems. All these wars that are going on, if you look back in history 20 years ago, Afghanistan's a great example. Osama bin Laden was part of the freedom fighters back in the 80s when Russia attacked Afghanistan. We supported bin Laden, we financed him, we trained his people. Suddenly, when Russia pulled out, we found out, or we knew at that time, that there was a huge oil supply under the Caspian Sea. That's why we're in Afghanistan, folks. The pipeline has been built, of course. We know that they're trying to blow it up every other day, but Halliburton went in there, that's Dick Cheney's company, for those of you who don't know, and have built the pipeline, and now suddenly the Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, they're the enemies, basically because they wouldn't allow Standard Oil to go in and Unocal to go in and build this pipeline back in the 90s. So you can see the cause and effect of everything in this world. The founders had a non-intervention policy. Do not involve yourselves or try to influence other countries out there. Basically, if you don't like someone and you want to make them your friend, trade with them. Make it more profitable for them to be your friend than it would be to be your enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really turns most people around on that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about those 18 specific jobs. Again, page 37. I'm not going to go over all of them. I just wanted to kind of hit the highlights.
Yeah.
The second one down, again, it says, read the intro, the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States, but all duties, imposts, excises shall be uniform throughout the states. Very important part up there. The taxes they can collect are duties, imposts, and excises. Nothing about direct taxes. As a matter of fact, there's only one thing that's written in the Constitution twice, and that is no direct taxes. The founders believed that your labor was between you and your creator. You were given certain gifts. You go into the marketplace and exchange those gifts for some kind of remuneration. And that's between you and the creator. It has nothing to do with government. That was a very specific thing they listed.
Hmm.
So the second one down, it says, by the way, it says right there, the Congress shall to have these duties to provide for the common defense and general welfare. That's all they're supposed to do, is defend us, defend our borders. Yeah, they're doing a job on that, huh?
Right.
Defend our borders and to provide for the general welfare. In other words, create conditions where we can have the best opportunity for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's not about regulating us from birth to grave and beyond. It's like, and again, in the democracy where we've exchanged our God-given rights for privilege and for our benefits, we know that government has gone way beyond their job description, and we now have 501c3 corps for churches. And if you don't understand what a 501c3 church is, please read the regulations. Go to the IRS.gov and read the regulations. Those churches are highly regulated by government, and they cannot say certain things. Every once in a while you hear something in the news about some preacher who endorsed one candidate over another and they got in trouble because of it. Well, that's not, government's not supposed to be involved in religion. They're not supposed to be telling anyone to say anything in front of the pulpit. But now because they went to government and sought permission as a corporation, government created that corporation, therefore can regulate the church.
Wow.
Driver's licenses, marriage licenses, birth certificates, SSNs, we all know what that is, right? Some people call them the Social Security number. We hear it's always referred to it as the slave surveillance number. That's how they track all your activities. So again, those are the things that we've exchanged and gotten all this regulation from government because we volunteered for it. And just like you volunteered to get those numbers and IDs and birth certificates, etc., you can reverse the process anytime and become a sovereign-minded individual.
Now, Mark, let's just use one of those as a quick example here, because we talked about this notion of government licensing, you know, practically everything now, and that the government stepped in to license things that we ourselves could not privately engage in our own, you know, private contracts anymore for some reason, right? I mean, it's inherent in our nation here that people, you cannot limit people's ability to contract and agree, you know, between them. Two people can come together and decide to work something
out. Sure. But Article 1, Section 10, the state can write no law to impair the obligation of a contract.
Right. But then certain things came along where the government said, hey, wait a minute, you people need us to intervene here and grant a license for you to contract.
Mm-hmm.
And marriage is one of those, for example, right?
Yeah. How
did that start?
Please write your local county. It's nothing more than an equity contract. It has nothing to do with love. It has nothing to do with the Creator. What you're doing is you're saying, we want to get married before men, and it has nothing to do with God. As a matter of fact, in California, I don't know if you're aware, you can have a completely silent ceremony. You don't have to say anything, as long as you have the license.
Wow.
However, there's another side called the common law marriage. We've all heard of it. The common law marriage says we're going to get married under common law, which is another word for it is common sense law. That's when two people get together and write their own contract. And I have several samples of those common law contracts.
Hmm.
And again, it can range from I love you love me, we love God, let's get married and spend the rest of our lives together. And I also have one that's about 15 pages long that goes through everything from drug use, alcohol use, how the children are going to be raised and educated, etc. It's totally up to the individual as to what you write because it's a private contract.
Hmm.
By the way, the word license, permission to do something that would otherwise be illegal. That's from Black's Law Dictionary.
Wow.
Government's telling us we can't get married without their permission. We can't travel without their permission. We can't do business without their permission. Well, you know, as I hold up my hand, I know there's a finger there somewhere that tells them how I feel about that.
Well, one of the visuals that really comes up for me when we speak about this, you know, intent and role of our government amongst the people is all these people living in harmony, you know, hanging around together like on a big field somewhere, and a big circle around them of the government looking away, right? Looking away, protecting us in the center so that we can live freely amongst ourselves, and they are there to protect us and secure our right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, when we look at the world today, it seems like they're looking in to the circle at us and saying, you know, what are you doing wrong? Oh, you might be doing something wrong, so we should be checking you out. And somehow this entire thing got turned around, as you were mentioning, strongly due to the fact that many of us have opted into it voluntarily, right? We said, hey, we want your benefits, so sure, we'll sign on to this program so you can govern us or tell us right from wrong, and therefore we have to follow the rules.
Well, if I could just interrupt you for a second, I think most of us at this point in life believe that it's required that you have these items. I don't think people are really volunteering into it, although that's really the law. However, what most people believe is, oh, I can't get a job without a Social Security number. I can't travel without a driver's license. I can't get married without a marriage license. Where, of course, there's nothing further from the truth. Every license in America, driver's license, is a commercial license. Please look it up in your system.
We're going to go to a quick break, and we will be right back.
And, Mark, if you could be so kind as to buzz us right back in, we're going to try to get a better connection on the line.
Okay. So you want me to call back?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
We're going to take a quick break and come right back with Mark Lyon in just a few moments. Mark is an average guy who has read the Constitution from front to back and really understands the notions of our core freedoms and from where they stem, really the same things that ideally every one of us as a citizen here in the U.S. would understand, where our freedoms come from, what it's about, so that we can do our best to really embody that. And we spoke earlier, Mark mentioned about, you know, reading the document, understanding it, and sharing it with others. We'll be right back.
Sold out to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit. But my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Ooh, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom?
We are back. You are listening to KPOO San Francisco 89.5 FM. You're listening to Reality Sandwich, and we are talking to Mark Lyon about the Constitution and some of the fascinating concepts that many of us have not known or heard about or thought about before. So let's see if we can get him back on the line. Are you there, Mark?
I am here.
Okay, this is great. We can definitely hear you much better.
Oh, good.
So, you know, I think that this Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution is fascinating because, honestly, I hadn't read it before, and I didn't realize that there aren't that many things that they're supposed to be doing and that jobs that Congress is supposed to have. So I would love to share some of these. Of course, since we won't be able to read all of them, we may not be able to see that the scope is fairly limited, but anybody can go anytime they want and look for themselves, because I think that this is a part people always ask me, well, does that mean that you don't want programs to help the poor? Does that mean, you know, and they start going into all of this. So I would love to talk about these jobs that Congress are given and then go from there. How does that sound?
That's fantastic. And since you mentioned about taking care of the poor, what I'd like to do is start out and again get back into these 18 jobs, but read a quote from a book called The Law by Frederick Bastiat. Again, the book is called The Law by Frederick Bastiat. For those of you familiar with laissez-faire books, that's www.lfb, as in boy, .org, or it might be .com. Don't quote me on that. Look it up for yourself. And this book, it's a couple-hour read. It's very simple. It was written back in the 1840s. And it says, law and charity are not the same. The mission of the law is not to oppress persons and plunder them of their property. Even though the law may be acting in a philanthropic spirit, its mission is to protect persons and property. The law is justice, simple and clear, precise and bounded. Justice is neither more than this nor less than this. If you exceed this proper limit, If you attempt to make the law religious, fraternal, equalizing, philanthropic, industrial, literal, or artistic, you will then be lost in an uncharted territory, in vagueness and uncertainty, in a forced utopia, or, even worse, in a multitude of utopias, each striving to seize the law and impose it upon you. This is true because fraternity and philanthropy, unlike justice, do not have precise limits. Once started, where will you stop? And where will the law stop itself?
Mm-hmm.
So we see what's going on in the democracy is the law, even though it sounds like a great idea, taking care of the poor, taking care of the elderly, health care, Medicare, education, all of these things, which, by the way, are not in their job description, are better left to we the people. I firmly believe that if government was not involved in things like welfare and food stamps and the free cheese program, etc., we the people, in keeping our own wealth, would be able to take care of this much better.
Mm-hmm.
I just say to we the people, who's smarter at spending your money, you or government?
Right. We've seen how there need to be more committees and more meetings and more regulations and more organizations, and it becomes diluted and a waste, really, of resources.
Oh, and it gets so convoluted that, you know, there's no way you can follow the law because there's so many volumes of it. The original plan was, let's keep it simple. Honor your contracts and don't hurt others.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh, is that as easy as it can get?
Well, these are inherently human principles that I think when we really stop and think about it, we all resonate and connect with. But there's this disenchantment that most of us walk around with, that this world that we have around us, this nation that we live in now, is not in alignment with that.
Agreed 100%. And when I go around the country giving talks like this, one of the things I ask people is, are you capable of self-government? And everyone, of course I'm capable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that means you don't need to be regulated. How about everyone else? Oh, yeah, everyone else needs to be regulated. Wait a second. If we're all individually capable of self-governance, then none of us need to be regulated. And, of course, like you said, there's always going to be, or I said earlier, there's always going to be that small percentage of the population that's not going to be able to self-govern, that are going to be out to hurt others, and absolutely we need to put those people away.
Mm-hmm.
However, we know today that 70% of the criminals in prison are nonviolent drug users, offenders.
Mm.
Wow.
They do not belong in prison. Mm. Certainly, they probably need counseling, and that's, of course, a personal choice on that, but this has nothing to do with government. Government cannot interfere on any personal choices. Now, I know I offend people when I talk about abortion. Abortion, at this moment, is a personal choice. We, the people, have not decided that the unborn fetus is a human being. Now, you know, as time goes by, if we decide that, that's a different thing. But today, because it's not a human being, it's a personal choice of the mother. No matter how you feel individually, and I have my own personal feeling on that, I cannot impose my personal feelings on the population. It's an absolute individual choice. So shall we get back to the jobs?
Yes. Sure.
Okay. This is now, I believe it's Clause 4 in Article 1, Section 8, to establish a uniform rule of naturalization and uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies throughout the United States. And as we go through these jobs, it's going to start making sense why the founders had this in mind.
Hmm.
Number one, yes, Congress can regulate naturalization, people coming into the country. That's one of their jobs because we wanted to make uniform rules whether someone entered through the Port of New York or through New Mexico so that anyone entering the States United had to go through the same process. That's a federal job.
Mm-hmm.
Bankruptcies, another great job. We didn't want someone going bankrupt in the Republic of New York and then moving to New Jersey and being able to leave those debts behind. So it made sense we're going to give that to the federal government. By the way, I want you to notice that I said the Republic of New York, Republic of New Jersey, we've all heard of the Republic of California. These were independent nations. That was the original idea, that each state was an independent nation with its own laws in a republican form of government.
Hmm.
That was the original plan. To skip down, to coin money, regulate the value thereof. We wanted, and of course, standard weights and measures. We wanted the government to have one uniform of money, a form of money, so that we could trade it between states. And again, that makes sense. Punishment for counterfeiting and securities and of current coin of the United States. Again, by the way, if you read the Constitution carefully, there are only three felonies, and that's piracy, counterfeiting, and treason. Those are the only crimes mentioned in the Constitution. So all these other felonies that they've written have really nothing to do with their job description.
So let's just take that, for example, but it happens every day. So what's going on? Where do these people get their power? Is there a way to challenge that power? What do we do now?
Well, of course, talk to each other every day. Read this Constitution. You know, one of the things I like to share is that, 1% of Americans know the five rights guaranteed in the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights.
Wow.
47% of Americans know at least two Simpsons. Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? So, again, what's going on is citizen narcolepsy. We need to pick up this document, read it, get a hold of a law dictionary. It's not that complicated. A quick story. I was a school teacher for 11 years. I used to teach fourth and fifth grade, and I would teach the Constitution every year. Well, one year I got called into the office, my principal. And she said, by the way, very good friend, she says, I hear you're teaching the Constitution. I said, that's correct. She goes, why are you doing that? And I said, well, because it's the law of the land. How are you teaching it? Oh, we're just reading it, and I got my law dictionary, and we're defining the legal terms. She paused for about 5 seconds and said, well, that's okay as long as you don't try to interpret it. I said, Juanita, there's no need to. It's in English. So think about it, folks. This whole thing about judges and juries, you know, interpreting the Constitution, it is a very simple, straightforward job description. And with that law dictionary, you can define these terms. And what I suggest for people to do is have constitutional study groups so they can go over this document. I've read it probably between 25 and 30 times now, and every time I read it, I learn something new.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, we do have a constitutional study group that is going to be starting May 18th?
16th. Next Tuesday evening here in San Francisco in the Haight at Coffee to the People.
Yes, it's from 6 to 8 p.m., and you can also go on our website and find out more information. It's a free get-together event just to gather and talk about all of this, and you can find us, of course, at healthfulliving.org. So we are going to do that, Mark, and we're really excited about it.
God bless you. That's fantastic. Good for you.
Now, Mark, I know we've been jumping around a little bit here
sure.
in our constitutional overview, and for our listeners who don't know those basic rights that are secured in the Constitution, could you please share those with us?
Do you want to go to the Bill of Rights then?
Well,
You mentioned a moment ago the top six things that are secured for all of us.
Maybe
in the First Amendment, and now I'm going back to page 49, for those of you following along in your Citizens Rule Book, which I hope you all have in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic little book. The First Amendment, by the way, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution was written in 1787. In 1789, it didn't have enough states. They needed at least two-thirds of the states, 9 out of 13, to ratify it and make it the law of the land. The southern states were very nervous that the Constitution as written was going to take away a lot of personal rights, or at least the possibility. So they added the Bill of Rights that became effective on December 15, 1791, a couple of years later, with the ratification of that ninth state we were talking about. And in these 10 amendments, the first 10 amendments, known as the Bill of Rights, these rights were guaranteed. Now, I want you to notice the way this is written. It doesn't say you have the right to free speech. It says, let's read Article 1 together. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievance. So notice the way it's written. It's not that you have these rights. Remember, the Declaration's about you. The Constitution is about a job description and limitation on their powers.
Mm.
Congress shall make no law respecting these items.
Interesting.
And I think that's a tremendously important distinction here, to understand that these rights are inherent to us, that free speech is inherent, and that the purpose of these rule, so to speak, with our government is to declare that they will not ever inhibit that.
Well, that those are our rights, and that this is putting restrictions or limitations on the government, and people don't think that. They think that this Constitution gave them these rights.
Nope.
Which is fascinating.
What I say, instead of saying, you know, a lot, one of the famous phrases is, my constitutional rights. No, my rights granted by the Creator.
Mm-hmm.
That's where your rights came from. The Constitution's about them and their job description.
Very fascinating.
Okay. By the way, everybody write the word grasp, G-R-A-S-P, grasp. Like, can you grasp these rights? G for grievance. R for religion, A for assembly, S for speech, and P for press.
Hmm.
I like acronyms.
That's great.
Yeah. So can you grasp these five rights guaranteed that the government cannot write no laws against them?
Hmm.
And there you are, those five rights. So now, even though you might know Marge, Bart, Lisa, Maggie, and... Homer, thank you. You still know those five rights guaranteed.
Wow, great.
Okay.
So we've learned something already, many things already.
Well, that's my pleasure. Again, like you said at the beginning, I'm not a scholar on this. I just picked up this document about 30 years ago, started reading it, and I read it probably about twice a year on
mm-hmm.
average.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, every time I read it, I pick up something new.
Now, you've been out there speaking to people. You've certainly had many relationships with folks who perhaps initially were clueless, that had no idea, had never read this document, and then later had spent some time with it. In your opinion, what's the personal benefit of we the people reconnecting with this 200-and-something-year-old document?
Well, what you said earlier, you know, really struck home to me, and I agree 100%, that it resonates within us, that this is something that when we hear about it, it says, wow, that's so logical. It makes so much sense. Again, we're all products of our environment. I was born in the 50s. I was born and raised in a situation where, okay, my first paper out in the late 60s, I need to go out and get a Social Security number. So Dad went out and got me one. Of course, I got the birth certificate at the hospital. Wasn't aware that was going on until years later. I turned 17. My gosh, it's great. I can get my driver's license. So we're indoctrinated. We like to refer to it, and again, please understand that education is one of those things. It's not one of their job descriptions. Government should not be involved with education. What happens when government is involved in education is with our students and our children are learning what they want them to learn.
Mm-hmm.
We like to refer to them as indoctrination centers
mm-hmm.
or the public fool system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's lots of things I'd like to call my former students, and I hope a couple of them are listening on the radio, that, hey, I'm sorry, because I thought that this was true, too. And as I read more and more about the Constitution, I learned that, no, this is not their job.
Mm.
And for me personally, it does resonate inside. These are inherently human principles, and when I read this document, I go, yeah, that makes sense to me. And I read, actually here in the Citizens Rulebook, there's a summary initially of the Ten Commandments. You know, some things that are inherently human as far as where, you know, how we all want to get along, and what we believe in is our, you know, personal capacity and capability to govern ourselves, to get along, and to, quote, do the right thing. I think we all know what that is inside, and so by simply reading the Constitution, by reconnecting with this, we can resonate with it personally and go, yeah, I'm about that, and then by re-empowering ourselves with those principles and those ideals, when we look around in the world today and we see things that are going on and we see government infringement upon these rights, we can be a little more personally outraged.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sure, everybody has their own personal choice about what they want to do with that outrage or that discontent. However, being ignorant of it is not a good thing, because being ignorant of it means we all just play along and allow these things to happen.
Mm-hmm.
If we're ever going to repopulate our nation with free people who really, quote, get it, we've all got to reconnect with what it is all about.
Absolutely.
Hence, this basic document, I shouldn't say basic, because it was extremely well written and well thought out, many, many years ago, that has been the law, the founding law, in this free nation of ours for a long, long time, but over the many years has been co-opted by individuals who can personally benefit from it. Mm-hmm. And I know that I don't like being part of any group, whether it's at a small company or a team or anything, where, you know, one or two people are, you know, taking advantage of everybody else for their personal benefit. Not
exactly.
Cool. But when it's happening on a large collective scale, the only way it's ever going to change, or the only way that I personally can ever really feel that I'm contributing to it, is to understand what it's all about and what it means to me personally.
Exactly.
That's my little diatribe.
A couple of points that you made. I want to make it perfectly clear. Atheists are welcome in the Republic. You know, you don't believe in a creator. We're all fine with that. It's personal choice. Understand that it's all honoring your contracts and not hurting others, which, of course, we all have, like you said, we all have that conscience. Some of us refer to that as the voice of God. That's totally an individual choice. But atheists have common sense, and they certainly are capable of not hurting others and honoring their contracts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to point that out, that folks, we're not trying to not include certain groups. It doesn't matter what your personal belief system is. Just don't hurt others.
I think that's where the whole thing about the separation of church and state comes in, is because people start getting nervous and equating God with religion, and all of a sudden now we need to make restrictions on it. And I think if it's looked in terms of the opposite of, well, not the opposite, the other side of man is the divine, and whatever that is for you, that, in other words, you inherently have these rights. Wherever that comes from for you,
mm-hmm.
it's not given to you by some other man. It's innately inside of you, and a lot of people call that God. Some people call it something different. Some people haven't thought that far ahead.
Sure.
But I think that's where sometimes people get nervous, is that once you bring God in, now they're thinking religion, and now we need to separate the two. But when we're saying God, we're not saying religion. In fact, we're saying people have the freedom to do whatever they want with their beliefs beyond that.
That's why I usually stick with the word creator, because it's so universal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't indicate a religion. And by the way, the founders were Christian men, the founding families, Christian men and women. And we know that the women were just as influential. John Adams would never have existed without Abigail. That's a totally true statement if you read his memoirs. He owed everything to her. And one of the things Martin brought up earlier that I wanted to bring forward again is about this idea of the circle. That we, the people, are inside the circle, and government is facing away from us. Unless we tap them on the shoulder and say, citizen over there, this individual, has threatened or hurt my property, we now need you, government, to do one thing. Gather a jury of our peers so that we can tell them the facts of the case and they will decide who's right and wrong.
Mm.
Simple. Let's keep it simple. And another thing you guys just said, or I believe it was Martin that said, about the system being based upon money and value and equity now. You know, one thing we know, if you go to a baseball game and just before the guy slides in the home plate, he takes out a $100 bill and gives it to the umpire, we would call that a bribe. Yet, when a corporation goes to a representative and gives them $1 million or some kind of gift, that's called lobbying. Everything is based upon value today. Everything is commercial contract. The Title 26, the Internal Revenue Code, is commercial law. It's based upon commerce. I think everyone would agree that individuals aren't taxed, but individuals' activities are taxed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's about, is if you use their number, if you work, volunteer those IDs, those licenses, etc., and become part of the system, then yes, there's an obligation, according to their law, to file and report it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's life as a series of choices.
I love how you talk about keeping it simple, because I think clearly that's what we see with the founding documents, that they're simple, they're easy for people to understand, they limit the powers and the complexity of all the laws. But interestingly, where we are today is at the totally opposite end of that spectrum. And when you have something that's so complex and difficult to navigate and to go into court, you have to be some expert and know all these things, then what does that do? It makes it so the individual person doesn't know their rights and doesn't know how to stand up for themselves, and it's very easy for the power to be taken away from them. And so I see this big separation now between the people and the law, and all people need to do is simply read this simple document and go back to, okay, this is all that we started with. All the rest of this stuff is on top of that.
Right, and I'd like to read a couple more of these jobs here that let people know what the founders had in mind.
Great.
For example, Section 15, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 15 says, to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. The founders, like I said earlier, had a non-intervention policy. We're not supposed to leave our borders and start wars. We are now in over 140 nations, not including Iraq and Afghanistan, with over 2 million U.S. boys out there defending other nations.
Wow.
It's not in this document. And finally, the second to last clause, it's Clause 16, to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 square miles square as may by cession of particular states and acceptance of Congress become the seat of the government of the United States, and to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. Very important clause here. What this says is, number one, this is again 1791, before we decided to put our capital in land ceded by, partly by Maryland, partly by Virginia. By the way, it's now 60 square miles, known as Washington, D.C. Congress only has legislative jurisdiction over that area, Washington, D.C., the territories, and other needful buildings. So when you open up a federal courthouse door and step inside of it, you are entering federal jurisdiction. However, in the rest of your state, Congress cannot write laws unless it has to do with those 18 jobs. Please read them. And then finally, the last one, it says, to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or any department or office thereof. Again, stating the foregoing powers, those other 17 jobs we just talked about, we'll talk part of them, that's all they can legislate.
Hmm.
Nothing else.
Mark Lyon, thank you so much for being with us today. Folks can connect with you at source190.com.
That's S-O-R-C-E, no U.
190.com. Mark is a regular guy like you and I who has been reading the Constitution for over 30 years, and just like any of us can, you know, reconnect with those founding principles of freedom and understand. So when any of us are out there walking around in the world today and discontented with what's happening, we have to ask ourselves, you know, are we complicit in some way? And do we really understand and remember, you know, what it's all about? And reading our Constitution, connecting in with that founding document, is a great place to begin to recalibrate our reality, to shift our paradigm and embrace once again those core notions of freedom of choice. It is all about choice. So we invite you to come to our meeting, our constitutional meeting,
May 16th, 6 to 8 p.m.
at Coffee to the People in the Hate, and you can read more about that at healthfulliving.org.
Mark, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Have a great day, everyone.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Next week on Reality Sandwich, we'll be speaking about another major paradigm shift that some of us are working on embracing and moving forward, and we'll be speaking about scarcity and abundance.
So we will see you every Thursday at noon on Reality Sandwich. I'm Julie Matthews.
I'm Martin Matthews. I'm a certified medical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate. You can get past shows of Reality Sandwich at realitysandwichradio.com.